All right. Hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network. www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. April 8th, 2026. Beautiful day here on the east side of the country. I hope it's great wherever you are at. We are in the midst of a spring season, and it is beautiful. I was at the grocery store this morning, and of course, it's beautiful, but it's actually pretty chilly out. And we've had these 80s to 50s to 80s to 40s to 70s to 60s. You know, it's been really all over the place as far as the temperature is. But it is beautiful outside, but it is chilly out. I was just at the grocery store, and this guy's like, I don't know when spring's going to come. I'm like, this is it. This is spring. I know for me, I put a lot on spring. I have a lot of expectations of spring. And I don't think it ever really comes full circle when it comes to my expectations. But it is beautiful, and I always say to myself, at least, you know, this is springtime. Don't ignore it, because it'll be summer, and you'll be like, shit, it's hot. So it's beautiful out. I hope everyone's having a great day. I haven't done the podcast for, I don't know, maybe a week. Hope everyone had a nice Easter. The holiday was fun. Kids out of school this week, so of course it is spring break, and man, everything's just terrific. I have had quite a week. I don't know how much I've gotten into it in this podcast. So it is April 8th, so we have 6 days until, what is it, April 15th? So we got 7 days. Excuse me, let me give an extra. Let me give you an extra one. 7 days until it's time to file our taxes. Ooh. And I don't know how much I've shared in this podcast, but my journey with the taxes this year have been quite stressful. Quite stressful. I am, you know, for the longest time, and I always pay my taxes. I owe no money. I mean, I owe no back taxes. And I'll get to it, but I did not owe any money this year, thank God. Actually, I shouldn't say that. I did owe some money. But anyway, I've always paid my taxes. I've always thought that was important. It was drilled into my mind by my father, pay your taxes. And, you know, in most of my life, I've always just had jobs where they deducted my taxes, right? And then at the end of the year, I'd be hoping to get something back, right? And I remember a guy said, people that get money back every year in taxes, now this is very general, so don't get your tax gloves all fluffed up, but he said that if you receive money back from the government every year, that is bad tax management. You should be, in his eyes, you should owe them, right? You should hold their money, not vice versa. And it, you know, I'm sure there's some truth to it. I mean, there's a lot of truth to it. The problem is like, am I responsible enough to do that? And I'm not. I'm not. Actually, I shouldn't even say that. I don't even know what I'm responsible. I'm responsible. It's just, it's not how I grew up. It's always been like, you know, we file our taxes, and then, you know, maybe I'll get $700 back, or maybe $1,000. And whereas it's life's gone on, maybe it's gone up, and then had kids, and then different presidents, and it's this and it's that, and it's always just this thing. Well, last year I had a salon, and I closed it down halfway through the year, and then became a 1099 at another place. So I was, former salon owner. And when I owned the salon, it was fantastic, man. I mean, it was great because I just worked. I took all the numbers, and then I sent them over to the accountant, and then the accountant would withhold my taxes. It would pay all my business taxes. It would take care of all that. And then I would be given a check. I would be issued my money. And I did that for a long time. I did that for 15 years. So I hadn't really thought one way or the other about it. I remember when I first opened the salon, I had a different accountant. And I could do all sorts of writing off. It was very... It was different back then. You could write off a lot of things. And then, you know, I think a different president came in. I think Trump might have even created a larger standard deduction, which sort of covered, you know, unless you were really doing a lot of stuff, a lot of driving, a lot of, you know, whatever it is that the money you spend to run your business, if you're doing a lot of it, I'm sure there's deductions, but if you're just kind of in the middle there, you know, there's a standard deduction that most of us, and for, or I usually didn't reach. There was a time I reached it. You know, I used to have people that, when I worked at another salon, you know, the people that did the shampoos, they used to give you tickets, you know. If they did a regular shampoo, it was just $1. If they did a color shampoo, it was $2. You know, we paid the assistants to do the shampooing. And I would save all those tickets. I would write off all of that. I would write off all my clothes, my gas, anything that I bought that had to do with me working, I wrote it off, and you could, and it was fine. Well, I don't know what happened, man, but this year, I don't know what happened, but man, my taxes, I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say it was my accountant's fault. I don't know. I don't know really who else to blame, but my estimated taxes were very high. I mean, to a point like I didn't even have enough money to pay them. I was like, I told my wife, I don't know. I don't make enough money to pay my taxes. Right. I'm like, what the fuck? What the hell's going on? And it was quite a financial burden to pay these taxes. And I actually had to borrow some money from my father because it was a lot of money. I mean, now when I say a lot of money, it was, for an average, simple guy like me, it was a lot of money. You know, I'm sure there are people out there that'd be like, oh, that's what I pay every year, you know, whatever. But it was alarming, right? It was probably, I would say, 10 times more than I would usually pay in taxes because I wasn't sure, because this time I was a 1099, meaning I need to be responsible for my taxes. So, and I hadn't been, right? I think I shared, man, we've been living a little bit above the skis, you know, a little out of our means. You know, my wife doesn't work. She's a stay-at-home mom, which is a job. I think it's a great job. She's very important. We've argued, you need a job. And then I'm like, do I really want her to go work? Not really. You know, and of course I'm not like, you need to do this, but you know, it's a conversation we have, but it works better with her being home. But I'm like, I don't know if we can do it. I just don't know. So last year was a tough year as far as taxes were concerned. I did get them paid. I had to borrow some money from my dad. He's like, why am I paying your taxes? And I go, I don't know, Dad. I just don't have enough money. And he's like, it's fine, whatever. You know, he usually gives us money at Christmas, and I was just going to use that. So anyway, I had to go. I got the phone call. Your taxes are ready. I was like, oh, God. I go, I hope we get a little bit of money back, the amount of money I had to pay. And when I say I had to pay, it was all estimated. You know, hopefully the estimation was overestimated, right? I'm hoping we maybe get a little bit of money back. Give me $1,000, something. I went and saw that lady, and the number that she told me that I was getting back was incredible. I'm basically getting all of that money back. There was something. I don't know why. I don't know what happened, but something went wrong, and I way, way, way overpaid. And in my mind, I thought I was overpaying. My brother's like, I've never paid that much money. And I go, well, listen, man, I don't want to, you know, I know several people. I cut a guy's hair yesterday, and he was like, you know, I haven't even filed. So I know a lot of people struggle, and I get it. It is a tough deal. But my father always taught me, do not fuck around with the IRS, right? I heard a lot of people, you know, with all of the alleged fraud that's going on out there in the world, some people are like, why am I going to pay my taxes if the government can't even, manage the money? And I go, don't fuck around with the IRS, right? You don't want to fuck around and find out.
We'll be right back.
dance in the light of the desert. Great song. Great White. So yeah, it was a major tax return. I'm so grateful. It was very tough. I told my wife, I go, it's not even that we're getting the money back, because I am very grateful for the money I get. In fact, I called my dad. I'm like, you know, I got this much money back, so I'm going to, you know, give him back what I had to borrow from him. But I told her, I go, it's not even that I'm getting the money back. It's that I'm not sure, like all last year, I couldn't figure out how I was going to make this work. I couldn't figure out how I was going to pay these estimated taxes. I wasn't sure where I was going to find this money. And it just didn't add up. And I actually had a meeting with my accountant. I'm like, dude, what is going on? Right? Now, granted, last year, my wife took money out of a 401k because she had to get a tooth fixed. That was a big tax hit. There were several things that happened. The changing of the closing down of the salon, whatever it was, where the, you know, my accountant's like, do you think we should do the same estimated taxes that we did the year before? And I was like, yeah, I guess. I mean, what do I know, right? So there were several things that I think got wrong, but all year I'm like, how am I going to, like, I forget what day it was. There was a day that came upon us where it was like the deadline to pay all of your estimated taxes. So, you know, I get 4 estimated taxes for federal and 4 for state, right? And I don't want to be, you know, I'm not being basic tax guy here. But, you know, I ignored all of them. I did pay my father's. I paid all my dad's estimated. But mine, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to pay this. And then I, you know, the deadline came, all the estimated taxes needed to be in. So I went and I just got the money out of savings and I paid it all. I sent 8 checks on the last day. And it was a huge relief, but I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this again next year. Right? I'm like, I told my wife, I go, you might have to get a job. I don't know. I was very lost, but I was like, you know, sort of, and I call this like, you know, this quiet period. You know, I don't start really getting too worried about taxes for another few months, but all of a sudden there they are ready to be paid again. And so I've just been kind of chilling out, but I'm so relieved. Oh my God, I am so relieved. And now they gave me my estimated taxes. So my estimated taxes for next year, just to get an idea, I'm paying $700 a quarter. That is about what I used to pay before. Something like that. And then I don't know what state is, but it was a lot before. So that's really great, you know. But now I'm like, shit, let's buy something. Let's buy something. And I have to, you know, I have to be prepared on the other side too, because, you know, first of all, I need to give my dad back his money. And second of all, I need to put it in savings because, you know, I wasn't spending it before, right? When I first got sober, my buddy Matt, he taught me a pretty big lesson in recovery, which was, you know, obviously coming into recovery, I was surrounded by a lot of great guys who had a lot of great suggestions, right? And the very, back to basics, right? Common sense kind of things, but I had gotten off the common sense path. And you know, obviously there's the ones, you know, you get on your knees, put your shoes under your bed, you know, do your laundry, keep your house clean, you know, check your mail, put the shopping carts back. But financial insecurity has always been a fear of mine. I've talked about it before in this podcast. It continues, right? It always will be a thing. And Matt used to say, listen, man, this is what I want you to do. Every day, I want you to go down and check the mailbox. And if there is a bill in the mailbox, I want you to pay it immediately. In fact, you know, take the checkbook with you. Back in those days, you know, everybody had a checkbook. Pay the bill and put it back into the mailbox. And then, you know, obviously put a stamp and mail it back and pay it. And I, you know, all my life, I'd followed my father, and my father had always taught me, you know, my dad back in, you know, then things have changed, right? But back in the day, like if a bill was due on the 15th, my dad would post-date that check on the 14th. It would go out on the 14th, and as long as it was in the mail by the 14th, you know, it was on time. Because my dad's like, we're not letting these people have my money any longer than they need to. And I was like, that is so smart. That's so smart. Same with taxes, right? That's what they always believe. Why do you want the government to have your money? You hold your money. You hold it, right? Invest your own money, and then at the end of the year, pull that money out and pay your taxes. Anyway, very common sense stuff. Very difficult sometimes, but very common sense. So, and I was like, well, that, you know, that's dumb. Why would I want to do that? And he goes, because guys like you and me, we multiply things, right? Like if there is a bill, let's say I owe $50, and this is just numbers, right? I'm just saying it. But let's say I owe $50 to somebody. I know the bill's coming. I know what it is. And I get the bill, and I just put it on my counter, right? And I'm like, I'll pay this later. And all of a sudden now, procrastination, right? That's another spirit. Procrastination has shown up. And I'm like, I'll pay it, you know, I'll pay it tomorrow. And then I procrastinate. And then I procrastinate. And then this fear, these, like, I don't know, spirits, whatever, but I start to worry, like, oh my God, I need to pay that bill. I need to go do that. Oh my God, I really need to do that. And he says, what happens is that $50 value bill starts to become more and more higher in value, right? So when you owe 50 bucks, but if, in the act of the procrastination and, you know, pushing it back and not doing it, it starts to have a 75 or 100. It starts to become more of a burden than it initially started off to be. Right? And this is even hopefully before it's like gone into the late stage. Right now we're paying a late fee. But it just, for some reason, when I worry about stuff, when I procrastinate, when I don't take care of stuff, it becomes bigger and worse. And he says, you just go to the mailbox every day, open the mailbox. If there's a bill, pay the bill that day and send it out. And that way you're not carrying around that burden, right? That rock. And I'd started doing that. And of course, eventually I would regroup. You know, I've gone back to procrastinating. I'm not perfect. I'm terrible. But I understood, right? And I did it for a while, and it did. It's a relief. I try to do that. I do try to implement that into my life today. But I still, like, you know, and now today it's even worse. Like, some of the major bills that I pay today are online. And I think that they just, you know, it is my responsibility, but man, it's really, I used to like getting the bill in the mail, having them in this little thing that held the bills. And then I would, you know, look at the bills, and then I could pay them, and I could be reminded. But now, like my car payment, it's online. I don't even get a bill from my car payment people. I just look, and it says you paid this the last time on this date, and then I try to pay it before that. That's it. I mean, it's a little bit chaotic, and obviously we're not writing checks. It's all online banking and, you know, phone apps, and it's just, I don't know, man. It feels like life is more like a freaking video game more and more. So that's what went on the other day. Getting that money back, it was just, like I said, it's a relief with the money, but now I understand that, you know, something's fucked up, and I don't have to worry about how I'm going to pay that giant sum of money again next year. It's more reasonable. In fact, the money that I got back, I'm going to make all of my estimated payments in one check. I'm going to pay them all. $2,800. Bye-bye. Out the window. Straight to the tax people. I don't want to think about fucking taxes all year. All year. So that's what was going on. I thought I would just talk about it. I don't know. I talked to a guy yesterday. He's like, I haven't even paid my tax. I haven't filed. I know I'm not the only one. I have a friend, her ex, he's way deep in the tax. I mean, it's a burden that I know we all think about. You know, I don't have any, I'm not here to give out words of wisdom. I can just share my experience, and I struggle. I definitely struggle. But I will say this, if I was going to say anything, pay your taxes, do the best you can, reach out, don't get in bad graces with the IRS, because they just, you know, I don't know. For me, if I didn't pay my taxes, I'd probably end up in jail. Now, I know a lot of people that haven't paid their taxes, and they seem to be doing just fine, but or they try to just pay everything in cash, and it's like, bro, be careful. But yeah, so the other thing I was going to talk about, which I thought was interesting, I went to a meeting on Monday, and it was a big book. I think it was page 286. I might be wrong. It was a great story. Typical early recovery AA story. In fact, these guys in the story was pretty much the beginning, right? It was the guy that Bill and Bob first met, and then they started to have a group. So they did not have the big book, right? They did not have the 12 and 12. I know there's some historians that can tell you exactly how that process took place, whether it was through the Washingtonians or whatever it was that they used to be sort of the basis. I remember somewhere in the big book, they talk about initially it was the first six steps, right? And they were a little different. And so that I always thought was interesting. But, you know, the story was, you know, how, you know, basically these people had the idea that they could stop drinking, and then they continued to keep drinking in the misery, and then finding this program and, you know, becoming, you know, a member and working it and finding some success and peace, love, and free of fear, right? All the stuff that comes from getting sober. But one of the things, and I wrote it down because I'd never heard it before, and I have heard things similar to this, but I had never heard this in this fashion, but it said, Providence will provide. You know, and it talks about it in the first step. An act of providence is what can get us out of that groove, that mode, at least that I was in. And it's exactly what got me out of my addiction was an act of providence. I've shared before, I'm always curious when someone says, oh, you know, just one day I decided to quit. I'm like, come on. Come on. I don't think that's possible. I know for me, I wished every day I could quit and I couldn't. I would wake up in the morning saying, today's the day I'm not going to drink. I might get a day. I might get two. But there was probably some hint of an act of providence that helped me get the 2 days, because me, unaffected, just drinking on a daily basis, there was nothing that was going to stop me. There was no magic. There was no begging. There was no pleading. I would wake up in the morning with an idea, maybe tonight, let's skip it. Or, you know, I would say, let's just do beer. Right? But I would start to feel better. And by lunchtime, I would start to, you know, in the morning, I'm like, I'm not going to drink tonight. That's it. I'm taking a break. But by lunchtime, I would sober up enough that I would say maybe just beer. And that would be my routine. Typically leave work, over to my parents' house, hit a couple beers out of my dad's fridge, lay on the couch, pass out, or at least take a nap. My mom would cook dinner, and I'd hit them up for some dinner. And then I would head on home, hit the liquor store, get a bottle of vodka, and then go to my house. You know, that was my typical day, but that would be the, you know, the up and down, the ebb and flow of me trying to stay sober in a day. But there was no act of providence, right? It was always just inconvenience, ill will, ill feelings, maybe a glimpse of trying to not drink, but I had the disease. I was possessed. I had the curse, man. The devil was in me. And there was a few times, several times, multiple times, right? Many times in my life have I had an act of providence. The difference was I was, one, probably wasn't ready to get sober. Two, didn't want to get sober. And three, there was probably nobody around me to come in and sort of swoop me up in that most, you know, low moment of my life where we're swoop-upable. We can be grabbed. We can be taken to a place and surrounded with love and, you know, maybe find a chance. But the, you know, whether it was getting, you know, I've shared, you know, getting punched in San Diego, crashing cars, getting thrown out of an apartment, getting arrested at 17, putting into, you know, juvenile detention, right? All of these moments where I could have said, man, that is bad. I'm embarrassed. I'm ashamed, right? Ego devastation, complete humiliation, right? These were moments that happened to me several times. But early on, the idea of quitting or not doing what I was doing was just absolutely off the table. I loved what I was doing. I loved getting drunk. I loved getting high. And I loved being bad. I loved it. I loved the lifestyle. I loved all of it. But over time, right? And I can remember one of the big ones was, you know, clearly getting in fights. Me and my brother getting in a big fight. I got in a fight down in Dewey Beach. I mean, I had a lot of these, you know, acts of providences. But the big one I remember was getting the DUI. The DUI was pretty embarrassing. And I remember because my parents were out of town. I got arrested and my uncle had to come get me out of jail. Actually, he had to come get me over at the Troop. I never even went to jail. He just came and picked me up. But I remember I went over to my parents, and I remember waking up at my parents, and I remember feeling such a overwhelming gloom and doom that morning that I just, like, that was the act of providence, right? There was something so humiliating that, you know, drinking was off the table. And had I had, you know, a program, or had I been familiar with recovery, or had I, you know, already been involved with the group, you know, and had they been able to come and get me or swoop me up or, you know, just sort of be part of my life at that moment, maybe. But even then, right, the DUI was just an inconvenience for me. I mean, I remember going to the DUI class. I was like, this is stupid. Right? First of all, and I was just telling this to somebody yesterday, you know, out in California and out in New Mexico, I was doing a lot of drugs. I was a drug addict. I was doing meth. I was doing cocaine. You name it, right? I wasn't doing heroin. Never got into that. But everything else, it was like, what do you want to do? And it got me in trouble, right? I got arrested. I went to jail, yada, yada, yada. You know, finally got out of jail, escaped California, ended up here. And the one thing I remember saying to myself is I can't do drugs, but I can drink, right? Because drinking is legal. And I love that idea and just jumped on it and milked that thing for all it was worth. But I remember going, when I got my DUI, I had to go to a first offenders. And that lady, she said, nobody in this room can drink during this program. I guess it was 12 weeks. I don't know. I don't remember what it was. But in this, while in this program, you are, you cannot drink. And I was like, why? I mean, that it's legal, right? Because the idea never occurred to me that since she told me that I can't drink, that that's exactly why I can't drink, right? Not that I should have an opinion or act differently because of it. The fact was, I was told no drinking, and I said, I'm going to drink. Actually, I'm just an alcoholic, so I don't know what I said. I just drank. And I, you know, of course, I didn't drink during the day. I would just drink at night. And so, I don't know whether she could smell it. I don't know. I never went to the class under the influence. My mom would have to drive me. And then at the end of the course, she said, has anybody had a drink during this, whatever weeks it was? And I, of course, raised my hand, and I said I did. And she said, well, sir, you can go for another 4 more weeks. And I was like, what? And I remember I had told my mom, and she was so pissed, because she used to have to drive me. Driving her adult son to a freaking DUI class. Oh, what a fucking, how terrible. And then to tell her that, oh, yeah, I have to go for 4 more weeks because I'm, I can't, you know, first of all, I can't lie, right? I have to tell the truth, supposedly, and I was drinking during the class, or during the week period. And then when I went back, the lady's like, and she goes, so I had to do 4 more weeks, and then she goes, has anybody had a drink in this last 4 weeks? And I said, nope. I was still drinking. I drank the whole time. Still drinking, but I was like, nope. And she goes, that's what you should have said the first time, idiot. I was like, oh, okay. But the point was, is that I, you know, in that mode, in those moments, I just could not quit. Especially in those moments, I'm not even sure I suggest it was even an idea. But the act of providence that happened to me March 31st, 1997, for some reason, the act happened, the providence took place, and then I ended up at a hospital, right? And that's where they offered, and I said, yes. It just lined up, because had that not happened, had I not gotten in the fight, or had it been just, you know, a black eye and not a split lip, you know, maybe had it been a time where I didn't need to go to the hospital, I could have just put ice on it and, you know, wallowed in my misery, who knows where I would be today? It wouldn't be paying a lot of taxes, I can tell you that. My life would be much different. And, yeah, it's great. Oh, shit. How much time have I spent on this? Oops. All right. Went too long. Let me read the Daily Reflections and then, so Act of Providence, it was great. If you're sober, Act of Providence can happen, I think, for a lot of things, right? I think it can happen whether it's drinking, it can happen in taxes, right? I don't know, but I've gone way too long. Let me just read this Daily Reflections. I'll let you guys go. I appreciate you for letting me share. How's that? I keep forgetting I have this app. I had a guy tell me that he had to remove the Anything AA app because it had too many trackers. All right, an inside look. We want to find exactly how, when, and where our natural desires have warped us. We wish to look squarely at the unhappiness this has caused others and ourselves by discovering what our emotional deformities are. We can move toward their correction. It's 12 Steps, 12 Traditions, page 43. Today, I am no longer a slave to alcohol, yet in so many ways, enslavement still threatens myself, my desires, even my dreams. Yet without dreams, I cannot exist. Without dreams, there is nothing to keep me moving forward. I must look inside myself to free myself. I must call upon God's power to face the person I feared the most, the true me, the person God created me to be. Unless I can, or until I do, I will always be running and never be truly free. I ask God daily to show me such a freedom. That is very good. All right, listen, I appreciate you letting me share. I'm sorry I went late. Please forgive me. I hope everyone has a great day. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.